trail and ultra runners, what is going on? Welcome to another episode of the Coopcast. As always, I am your humble host, Coach Jason Coop, and I am back from a 1 week hiatus. I apologize to you frequent listeners of the podcast for a little bit of a break in the schedule. I just could not get around to all of my duties as otherwise specified last week with some travel and some other things going on. But we are back this week and we are talking about the proverbial pain cave, which we all like to discuss during an ultra marathon when we are actually in the middle of the pain cave, or afterwards over the course of a few beers as we were recollecting our races. And in order to give this concept some context, some construction, and also some scientific backing, on the podcast today, welcome Lloyd Amica, who wrote a fantastic paper that I'm sure will resonate with a lot of you listeners out there, the title of which is Pushing Through the Pain Cave: Lived Experiences of Pain Tolerance in Male Ultra Marathon Runners. This is going to hit home with a lot of people. Lloyd is a referral from a previous podcast guest in this exact same area, Carla Mayan, who you longtime listeners will remember. She is a two-time offender of the Coopcast. And during this podcast, we really try to give some construction, some framework around what the pain cave is, how different people experience it, and how we can use those experiences in order to perpetuate performance down the road. As always, I had a lot of fun during this conversation. There'll be some links in the show notes for some additional materials that all of you guys can check out. And with that out of the way, I'm getting right out of the way. Here is my conversation with Lloyd Amica, all about the pain cave. All right, well, welcome to the podcast. Apologies for the delay on getting you scheduled here while my life was a little bit chaotic. I was recently at an ultra marathon this weekend, Trans Gran Canaria, and I was reminded of the topic that we're going to discuss today, which is kind of our relationship, or I guess ultra runnings as a broader subject group, their relationship with the pain cave. And I was reminded of this as the woman who won this race who's Courtney DeWalter, who's a great friend of mine. I don't coach her, but she's obviously well-liked in the community. Has kind of made this one of her things, right? One of her things that she kind of comes back to is she uses this kind of colloquial terminology that you try to expand upon in this particular paper. So it's definitely relevant and something that is always the top of mind for people. But before we actually get into that too much, and I'm sure we'll bridge to it at a certain point, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of sense of what you do for a living, the types of research that you look at, and what you're interested in academically?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess a kind of very brief sort of background. So I actually studied a marketing degree in the early 2000s and then worked in communications up until around 2016. And then I kind of started the shift towards sports psychology. So firstly, kind of getting a psychology sort of generalist kind of degree, then going on to do a master's program at St. Mary's University here in Twickenham in London in applied sports psychology. And then after that, I went on to start my PhD also at St. Mary's University as well. And I'm currently in the second year of the doctorate program. And I guess the research that we're going to be talking about today was actually a piece of research that I worked on for my master's dissertation during the pandemic. So around kind of 2021 kind of period. So that was quite an interesting time when everybody was in lockdown and there was all sorts of uncertainty in the world. And since then, I've kind of carried on down that path in terms of, you know, researching into pain, which I'm sure we'll kind of come to a bit later on. So that, yeah, that's just a brief one.
Yeah, and this has been a revolving topic that I've had on this particular podcast, and I've kind of come at it from a few different angles. I've had neuroscientists come on and discuss our relationship with pain more from a neuroscience perspective and how the brain perceives the different signals that it's actually receiving from the body. I've had psychologists come on and talk about the psychology of pain and our quote unquote relationship with pain. And I think one of the reasons that it is so popular is because endurance athletes as a whole, and I might go so far as to say ultramarathon runners in particular, maybe they might be a better example of this, they tend to hold in very high regard their individual and their personal relationship with pain. And it's part of kind of what draws them to the arduous nature of the sport and of the things that they are actually doing. I was wondering if you could kind of expand upon that before we get into this particular piece of research. If you could kind of expand on just that general cultural phenomenon, right, in sports in general, and then maybe in endurance sports in particular, and then in ultramarathon running as a final subset, why is that relationship and that fascination with our own internalization of pain or the pain cave or however we want to colloquially describe it, why is it such a pervasive theme?
I think there are lots of reasons for that. I think when we look at endurance, you know, specifically, there's been a lot of research that's been done within sociology and also psychology that you know, actually, you know, demonstrates that, you know, pushing through pain or any sort of pain experience that you have is quite often associated with something that's good. You know, it proves that you're training hard. It proves that something is working. And I've also seen that as well as a marathon runner myself, kind of, you know, going through training and seeing this sort of, I guess, experience of what it's like, you know, to be in pain. And I think that, you know, obviously each person in endurance sport is different and they all have different experiences. But I really think that, you know, pain is such a kind of universal experience that everybody goes through at some stage in their life, whether that's in sport, whether that's outside of sport. And so it's quite a personal, you know, subjective experience that can evoke a lot of different emotions for people.
And that's one of the reasons why it's, I think it's also so interesting to study because of the personal relationship. And it's, although there have been ways to try to objectively quantify it or objectively, I guess, describe it might be a better way to put it. Mm-hmm. We tend to more often fall back on some of the research, which is more akin to the one that we're going to focus on today, where people just verbally describe what they're going on. And we use that storyline and that dialogue to kind of paint a picture, so to speak, of what's actually going on internally versus give us a number on the pain scale, which is a way that you can absolutely evaluate pain or effort or anything like mm-hmm. that. But you don't see that in other types of like experimental conditions where you take a typical titration experiment and you say, okay, tell me how you feel about the color blue that this substance just turned or whatever the experiment actually is. I think the merging of both of those where we're trying to both describe things subjectively and objectively to try to bring a different layer of context to it. I think that also adds to the fascination of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned about pain scales there. So a long time ago, Borg's pain scale was developed. And that's something that has been a kind of a scale that's been used in so many different contexts over the years. And yes, I think you're absolutely right in the sense that, you know, things like pain scales do have a place and they do have value. But equally, we also know as well that actually sometimes when you use those scales, the context can be missing. And that's really what we kind of need as well in order to kind of, I guess, get a fuller picture of what's going on.
Yeah. And I think because of that, this is going to relate to the story that I opened up with Courtney, who just happens to be kind of one of the more prolific people mm-hmm. in the sport today that talks about her own personal pain cave a lot. One of the ways that individual athletes have relational points or points of commonality amongst each other is discussing what they have gone through during training or during a race in this subjective storytelling format versus you would more rarely hear a runner say, "Ah, I was at a 10 out of 10 on my pain cave scale." More often than not, they're actually describing the pain that they were actually going through specifically what it is, which I think also gives kind of a common bond to a lot of athletes and a lot of runners out there. The paper that we're going to discuss, I think, illustrates this really well. I'm going to read off the title and I'm going to leave it to you to kind of give the construction of what you guys were trying to accomplish. So the title is Pushing Through the Pain Cave, Lived Experiences, and that's what I was trying to touch upon, right? Lived experiences of pain tolerance in male ultramarathon runners. And it caught my eye because of a previous podcast guest that I had on here, Carla Mayim, and she was a co-author in this study as well. And as I was going through it, because of all of the dialogue that you inserted into this paper, it brought me back to much of the dialogue that I have had with athletes, including at Trans Gran Canaria, which I just got off the phone with one of my athletes who did that race since I was out there, as well as just talking with people out on the race course. So I'll turn the floor over to you to describe the study construction, like how you actually orchestrated the study in the first place. And then we can dive into what some of the phenomenon you were able to peel out from the subjects and what some learning lessons of that might actually be.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the kind of starting point really is, you know, why ultra runners first and foremost? So really when I was kind of doing my sort of initial sort of reading around this subject, it became quite clear to me that the research evidence was quite limited with regards to discussing lived experiences of pain tolerance through a qualitative lens. So there had been studies that had been done previously that were more kind of experimental studies, or they were based, you know, lab-based studies. And I really felt that there was something missing there. And I guess there was a kind of sense of intrigue as well, because I mentioned earlier on that I was, you know, that I am a marathon runner and I have my own sort of, you know, personal experiences of pain, but also really wanted to understand actually what would it be like for the people who are running longer distances than marathons? What would their kind of pain experiences be like? How might it differ from, you know, your marathon runner or people running shorter distances than that? And so I kind of went down this sort of initial kind of rabbit hole of trying to kind of shape out what the research could be like, obviously working closely with Carla Mayim, as you mentioned earlier. And where we kind of got to is essentially a number of things. Firstly, we wanted really to kind of take a qualitative approach to explore that kind of phenomenon in more detail, but not just simply, you know, describing experiences of pain tolerance, but also trying to kind of interpret what those experiences were like. So really trying to kind of make sense of the meaning that the runners were applying to, you know, lived experiences of pain tolerance. And then I guess in addition to that, just to provide some clarity, because I'm sure maybe your listeners might be wondering, why did we focus on male ultra runners specifically? And again, there were a number of reasons for that. So firstly, as I'm sure you're fully aware and your listeners are also fully aware, you know, there is still very much a high proportion of male ultra runners in comparison to female ultra runners, you know, non-binary ultra runners. And so that was one reason. The second reason was we also knew from the recent evidence that actually males tend to experience pain in different ways to females. And so we really wanted to kind of dive in a bit deeper into what might the male kind of, you know, pain tolerance experience be like. And then the third reason, which I kind of already sort of touched upon slightly, is just with regards to the limited amount of quantitative research that, you know, exists in this area. So those were some of the reasons really which kind of drove our decision to focus on male ultra runners. And then in terms of the actual research itself and how we went about conducting it, did semi-structured interviews with 6 male ultra runners. And this was, you know, during the pandemic. So lots of in-depth kind of video calls on Zoom, interviewing runners from different age groups, different levels of experience. And these were done over a kind of like a 3-month period, so summer 2021. And then from there, obviously, we started to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of what was coming out of those interviews. And yeah,
so that's where you got to. So let's make sure 6 male ultramarathon runners, right?
Yeah.
Predominantly an interview format where you're asking them a series of questions and you're trying to categorize the answers to a certain extent. Why don't you describe that process a little bit more, just to kind of peel the curtain back on how you academically take a conversation and start to make sense out of the data that can come out of that conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically what I did was to go through a initial kind of stage, which was essentially transcribing the data. So obviously, you know, after you've done your interview, you then sort of transcribe everything word for word. From there, we started to get into the coding sort of stage. So really starting to pull out some sort of keywords, key themes that were coming through. And then what I did essentially was to do that one by one. So you start obviously from interview one and you do that right through to interview six. And then when you do that, you then start to actually look for the themes that were coming out that were common across those six interviews. And obviously we'll talk about the themes at a later stage today. But essentially that the process that I followed in order to get to the themes. And then as I mentioned earlier on, once you've got the themes, that's one step. But then the next thing is to really sort of actually start to think about what did the runners actually mean by the things that they said. And that's where the level of interpretation comes into play. So you're essentially kind of analyzing the data, you know, interpreting it, and then trying to write up what your interpretations are, the findings.
I appreciate the description. What I was trying to pull out that I think the listeners will appreciate is that although these are conversations, there's still a systematic approach to the way that you're not only constructing the conversation, but the way that you're pulling out the information from the conversation, where you're focusing on keywords and then applying some sort of interpretation or analysis to that. It's not just picking out the things that you want to hear, right? It's a methodology to it, which I think a lot of times gets lost in this type or this category of research.
Cool.
Okay. So before we get into the themes, I want to tackle this with you. And this is, it's related to the paper, but I think kind of in a tangential way. I want to get your take on, why do you think the metaphor is a cave? Why is it not something, I mean, we could pick anything, right? But it's always been a cave. We all grew up in sports, and the metaphor has always been the pain cave, not the pain house or the pain hole or whatever. It's actually a cave. Why is that specifically the metaphor?
Yeah. I guess I have a kind of thought about this. And that is that, you know, when you are going through a dark moment in a race where you're having that tussle between your brain and your body, and one of them is telling you to quit, the other's telling you not to, and that tussle goes on, the cave obviously is also a dark place, generally speaking, when you enter it, right? And so I guess, in a way, the metaphor cave is essentially a way of describing the fact that actually, you know, you're trying to get through this dark place mentally, physically, and you're trying to come out of that cave where you kind of, you know, find yourself pushing through and kind of taking it on to obviously where you want to get to the finish line, for example. So yeah, that's my thoughts.
I've postulated this on a lot of long runs, and I'll ping off of that a little bit. I think a couple of the reasons that we like or people have gravitated towards this specific metaphor is the way that you could actually physically interact with a cave, as well as like an actual cave, a cave in real life, compared to how you actually will encounter or react in the pain cave metaphor. You can choose to, first off, it's an open-ended structure, right? One side is light and another side is dark, mm-hmm. and you intentionally mm-hmm. choose to go into it at some point. You don't have to, right? You see a mm-hmm. cave, you're running down a trail, you see a cave, you don't have to go in there, but you can choose to go in there, just like you can choose to go into the metaphorical pain cave. How deep you go is proportional to how dark it is. So the deeper you go into the metaphorical pain cave, the more pain you're theoretically experiencing, and the deeper you're going into your real cave in real life, the darker it is, the more light, the less light will actually kind of penetrate towards your eyes. You can always turn around and you typically know the way out. So you can get so deep into your real cave or into your metaphorical pain cave, and there's nothing stopping you from turning around and walking the other way, right? There's that element of commonality. And you also don't know how deep it goes. Typically, when you're looking into a cave or you're thinking about your metaphorical pain cave, you really don't know how deep and dark it is until you actually experience it. So I think that this, like this metaphor of a cave, of like an actual cave, when you think about it, it has all these experiential elements that you can translate from one situation to the other. I'm going to bring on at some point like a caver that explores these things and see if they have the same interpretation of that. But anyway, I wanted to get your take on it as well. Okay,
nice.
Let's kind of move forward to the themes. Because after all of these interviews, you did pick out, you know, several themes that each of the participants kind of continually came back to and started to apply or interpret meaning into each of those themes. I'll turn the floor over to you and you can take it in whatever format that you want to, from the thing that kind of impressed upon you the most to whatever. But what are some of the things that kind of stuck out to you after you digested all of the interviews? And you're able to kind of see what one of these more common themes actually like came out of the hopper.
Yeah. So I guess the first thing to say is that there were four themes that came out in the research. The first one was around building relationships with pain. And I think this was a really interesting theme for me because, you know, all of the ultra runners that were interviewed, they were all experienced ultra runners in the sense that they had competed in at least 5 ultra marathons or more. So that was how we defined experience. But I think what was really fascinating was that actually when they reflected on how their pain tolerance had evolved from, you know, a novice, you know, beginner sort of ultra runner to where they were that point, I think what became quite clear was that actually the more ultra marathon races they did, the more they found they were making this sort of physiological adaptation to the pain. And so it was almost like, actually, I know that my body is able to cope with the pain more now than I was able to when I did my first ultra marathon. And also kind of starting to kind of pick up on those signals. So when they were in races and they found that, you know, that they had this kind of, you know, type of pain in a particular location of the body, if it was something that they were familiar with in terms of they had experienced it before in a previous race, that was almost kind of reassuring for them that actually they knew what it was all about. It was nothing to worry about. They had kind of been there before. So I thought that was really interesting to see how that kind of develops and evolves with time.
In other words, what you're saying, it's not a little bit, but what they're demonstrating is the fact that it's a learned skill, right? That you can go it, you can learn about the way that you interact with pain. And if you're deliberate about it, you can apply some sort of progressive overload. I'm going to use training terminology here because that's my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. You can apply some sort of progressive overload so that the next time you can endure more, deeper, kind of whatever vocabulary that you want to use towards it. Interestingly enough, the comment that you just made and what the participants made about when they get to a point, they can recall that they have been to a similar point before as a almost like an ergogenic trick, right? Almost as like a psychological like trick within a race in order to perpetuate the performance. I 100% use that with my athletes at races, and in particular with athletes who have done harder races than what they are currently in, right? So if they've done some sort of ridiculously hard 100-miler and they're an easier 100-miler, not that there's any easy 100-miler, I'll remind them of that in the middle of the race when they have gone through a tremendous amount of pain and say, listen, you've been through something that's way harder than this. This is you're kind of like scratching the surface right now. And I've just found that to be very effective, which I think reinforces some of the dialogue that you're getting back from the participants as well, where they're actually able to recall those moments and kind of remind themselves that they have the experience and the fortitude to deal with whatever's in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought, you know, that kind of then sort of led quite nicely into the second theme, which was what is real pain? And that was real with deliberately with a kind of brackets or if you like, you know, quotes around it. Because I think, you know, this was quite an interesting one for me. And I think, you know, one of the things that really came out was the fact that real pain, and that is the perception of the ultra runner, was associated with injury or tissue damage or breakdown of some sorts. So in other words, implying that actually in the absence of an injury or tissue damage or breakdown, it's okay to continue, right, you know, pushing through the pain, right? And so I really kind of thought about this a lot. And I think something that's really interesting for me is when you look at society in general and you look at our understanding of pain, you look at the sort of images that we see around us, a lot of the time, you know, pain is associated very closely with injury. And actually, there was a research study done a couple of years ago by Maria Pavlova and team. And what they actually showed was that, you know, pain associated with injury is far more commonly portrayed in children's TV shows in comparison to other types of pain. And so that kind of also made me think, well, actually, maybe there's an element of us being socialized into thinking or associating pain with injury from a very young age. And maybe that kind of also, you know, shapes to a certain extent people's, you know, the runner's beliefs about that.
So Bugs Bunny falls off of a cliff and is stuck in a sling for the next scene with, you know, Daffy Duck or whoever Bugs Bunny is with, right? And or Wile E. Coyote. And we are then habituated to that relationship with pain being associated with an injury, and that conditioning, so to speak, bleeds into our adult lives in some way, shape, or form when we're performing athletics and running and training and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. And so I guess there's an element of that. And I think there's also, you know, an element of the culture of ultra running as well. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about this a bit later on, but I think also, you know, when you have spent so much time training, preparing for a big race, whether it's 100 miles, 24 hours, or, you know, whatever it is, I think there's also going to be an element of, you know, risk versus reward going through your head as well. You know, the reward being that I'm going to complete this race, and is the risk worthy of the potential reward or maybe not? And I think that will also depend, obviously, a lot on each runner and how they perceive their particular situation as well.
Well, and you touched on that really eloquently in one section of the paper, where there is a certain amount of gratification or satisfaction derived from pushing through some elements of pain, where it becomes part of the goal. We tend to think about our goal setting framework in terms of, well, I want to, you know, I want to run, you know, this race in this time, or I want to get XYZ place, or I want to get the big belt buckle versus the small belt buckle or whatever. But there is gratification and satisfaction from other aspects, other experiential aspects of both racing and training. And one that this paper touched on was the gratification that somebody can receive, or that somebody can earn, I guess is a better word, earn, from pushing through the pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you could even break that down further. So there's the instant gratification during the race itself, and then there's the delayed gratification. So if you take the instant gratification first, you know, you may, for example, discover in a race that you're able to pushed beyond the point that you hadn't anticipated before. And so you get that sort of instant gratification. And then the delayed gratification really comes at the end of the race. And that's not just gratification in terms of how you feel internally about the fact that you've crossed the finish line, but also the relational aspect as well. So, you know, the people around you, the other runners in the community, not just the race, but also in an online, like a digital space as well. You know, the kind of kudos that, you know, you might get from your peers or the bragging rights, so to speak. And so these kind of things as well can also be an influencing factor in deciding to push through the pain during the race.
And it's also a factor on the other side of it, which came out in a couple of the pieces of dialogue that are in the paper, having to endure or encounter some degree of pain at some point of a race, and in particular at a point in the race that would be earlier than what is anticipated at times, at least according to some of the dialogue that I'm reading here, and I'm kind of reading through the tea leaves a little bit. So please feel free to correct me if I'm making too big of a leap. But encountering that pain earlier than anticipated seems to trigger an internal dialogue to start to consider to discontinue the race, right? To DNF the race, because it's either unanticipated or they don't know if they can deal with whatever pain level that they're going to theoretically tolerate later on in the race. So I was wondering if you could kind of expand upon that relationship, because at one point where there's gratification for encountering it, there's also this other kind of, it's literally an other side of the coin where you encounter it and it starts to induce a kind of a negative thought process or cycle.
Yeah. So one of the participants in the study did talk about how the sort of stage of the race that you're at can influence your decision on whether you choose to push through the pain or maybe, you know, decide to withdraw. And maybe that's what you're referring to, because I think that, you know, to give you an example, you know, if you're in a 100-mile race and you're kind of getting through that, you know, pain cave, so to speak, at mile 60, you know, you'll probably have a quite a different sort of thought process to that was happening mile 20, for example, where you're obviously further away from the finish line than, you know, where you would be at mile 60. So I think, yes, absolutely. And we'll come on to it fairly shortly. There is definitely a negative aspect, not always, and it wasn't for every single participant, but there were certainly a few who had some negative consequences as a result of pushing through pain when maybe on that particular day, they would have been wiser to not continue. But I also think as well, and this is slightly going on a tangent, but you know, I do think that even though DNF is essentially three letters, I think it has a much deeper meaning than that for a lot of runners. And when they think of DNF, they sometimes think of failure. They don't want to let themselves down, or they might feel that they're letting other people down or their coach down. And I think sometimes it is hard to kind of accept that actually, you know what, a DNF isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, you'll get other chances, you know, to race again. You know, say that I think, you know, that's definitely something I've also thought about as well, is the meaning behind DNF to different people.
But, you know, I, this is reminding me one of the more difficult answers that I have to articulate to a really common question that I get is, how much pain is an acceptable level of pain to push through in a race? And it, to back that up a little bit, I think the person asking that question, they have come to the understanding that it's part of the gig. It's just part of the nature of getting into a big, arduous race, is that they're going to have to deal with some level of pain and or discomfort. So they've kind of got, they're not naive in the fact that, You know, this isn't all sunshine and rainbows and gummy bears. This is going to be difficult and at times painful. But as a coach, I've always had an extremely difficult time trying to articulate that answer. And especially when I've been in a forum where there's a lot of people and I've had to stylize the answer across people, athletes that I work with, athletes that I've never met before, coaches that are in the room and things like that. And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on that concept of, is there a way that athletes can start to internalize how much pain they should be willing to or should have to go through during a race? Or what things should they take into consideration when they're making that own self-assessment for them as an individual, which might be the more kind of like pertinent part of it? And like I said, I just want to kind of come back to, I think that this is a common theme that a lot of ultra runners struggle with, because mm-hmm. they get it. They're not naive. They understand that it's part of the gig, but they struggle with what, like, how much is too much and how much, and is that going to be deleterious long-term?
Sure. I think there's a couple of points to that. So the first thing I would say is, if we go back to that first theme that we talked about, so the building relationships with pain theme, and we talked about ultra runners recognizing pain, right, that they had experienced before during that kind of process when they were becoming more experienced ultra runners. And I do think that if an ultra runner experiences pain that they are not familiar with, they've never experienced it before, or maybe the pain is more severe than what they have previously experienced, that in itself can sometimes be a signal of, okay, something's not quite right here. What do I do? And maybe, you know, you try and get to an aid station and you get it checked out and, you know, those sorts of things. But also, there's another point as well, which is in the lead up to the race itself, how are you feeling? You know, are you carrying any niggles? Are you carrying any sort of injuries? Are you essentially already kind of entering that sort of risk kind of game, if you like, prior to the race itself starting? And if, say, for example, you have been experiencing pain for a while, you haven't had it checked out, and maybe you've got some niggles or, you know, or an injury of some sort, and it's getting close to the race day itself, then I think, you know, it's perfectly normal and valid for someone to ask themselves, actually, is this worth the risk? Or if they're being coached by somebody, you know, speak to your coach and say, look, you know, what do you think? Is this too risky? Do I sort of, you know, withdraw before the race actually kind of gets going? Or do I take a chance and see how it goes and maybe kind of see how, you know, how things net out? So there's a couple of thoughts that I have.
You know, it's interesting towards your last point of risk. In my caveman coaching type attempts at articulating an answer to that's typically the thing that I will lean on the most is, what is the risk value proposition for you as an individual? Are you okay with going big or going home? And if you're okay with that, then you come into an aid station and you're experiencing some weird pain, you're going to lean more towards suck it up and keep going down the trail versus I need to get this evaluated and I have to rethink my whole, you know, like game plan or whatever. If you don't have a very high appetite for risk, then that proposition is much different. You're going to be more conservative when you're evaluating those things going on. You come into an aid station with the exact same sensation, it could be much easier to pull the plug and DNF. I'm not going to say that's the only way that I try to help people work through that, but that's the predominant tool in my toolkit that I would use is try to help the athlete formulate what their relationship is with that risk-taking proposition and really what's within their value set, so that the decision that they have to make in real time is congruent with the decision that they have made in advance when they have more clarity and more time to process it. Because in a race, even though these are low intensity, long duration activities, and we like to think that there's a lot of time to think about things, those are not easy decisions to make because you're fatigued and your resources are compromised. Certainly your intellectual faculty and things like that are certainly compromised during the race. And coming up with this perfect answer, not that there ever is one, is definitely hindered by the conditions of the race that you're experiencing. So anyway, my point with that is just interesting to hear you mention this risk component that might be some piece of differentiation that people can apply when they're trying to determine how much pain that they are willing to endure.
I think that's another point as well. And, you know, maybe this is something you've also seen, but certainly something that I picked up on from the research was the desire to always kind of seek out longer distances. And it's, you know, you do a 50-mile run and you're really happy. And then you go online, other runners, oh, they've done 100 miles. They've done 150 miles. And then you think, oh, actually, you know what? I need to do 100 miles next time rather than stick 50 miles. And I do sometimes wonder whether, you know, taking that approach where, you know, you're always seeking to kind of run longer distances, I wonder whether the body has enough time to physically adapt to the challenges within a particular distance before you then jump to the next one and the next one and the next one. I mean, where does it stop, right? You know,
we're going to go off the rails a little bit here, but it's my podcast, so I can go on whatever rail I want to. I notice the same thing. People tend to go up in distance as a way to challenge themselves. And that's not the only direction, right? You can challenge yourself differently at the same distance or even go down in distance. But I think that because of this really unique phenomenon in ultra running, where there's a very big gap between your longest training activity and the race, which doesn't really exist at the marathon distance, right? You go and train for a marathon, everybody does an, you know, 18-mile long run or 20-mile long run or whatever. So your gap between the longest training activity and the race is something that you can easily conceptualize, right? It's 10 kilometers, you know, 8 miles, something like that, something that you can kind of easily wrap your head around. Okay, I did my long run here. I've got this much further to go. I can picture that. That doesn't exist in ultra running. And I think that's an attractive, it may be at a subconscious level, an attractive point to a lot of people who are in ultra running. Hey, I can only go 30 miles in training, so I'm going to do a 100-mile race. That unknown of 70 miles is actually an attractive quality of the event itself. And being that it's an attractive quality of the event itself, the way to enhance or to kind of perpetuate the continual adaptive nature that we are all craving is to continually increase that gap, right? Mm-hmm. So at first it's, you know, 30 miles to 100 miles, so 70 miles is the gap, and then it's 40 miles to 200 miles, which then it's 160 miles is the gap, and you can apply any sort of like mathematical equation to that you actually want to. But I honestly think that seeing this phenomenon, and I absolutely see this in the marketplace, and I see this as a coach, that people want to challenge themselves, and the venue or the conduit of the challenge is duration. It's not intensity. It's not nearly as common to challenge through the conduit of intensity. It's way more common to challenge through this conduit of duration. I think that some of this is this phenomenon of the unknown that people just have a craving for, and they're attracted to it. And that's why we see this phenomenon of going up in distance way more often than we see it going down in distance.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is really fascinating. And, you know, I think that, you know, each ultra runner needs to ask themselves, what's my threshold, right? Where do I stop? And actually, we have one participant in the study who was running 50-mile ultra races. He then sort of went to 100 miles, realized that actually he didn't really enjoy that, and then went down to 50 miles and he kind of stuck with that. Right? So I think sometimes you, maybe by default, you can also realize that actually this isn't for me and I need to focus on something shorter, which doesn't mean that you're less of an ultra runner.
Exactly.
It's just that's what you prefer to kind of, you know, do.
Yeah. Okay, I want to start to drill this down to things that athletes can take away that will make them better runners. You know, not everything that we explore in this podcast is an intervention, right? I'm going to take XYZ supplement, or I'm going to do this type of interval in order to make myself better. A lot of times it's just the knowledge framework that makes you better, a better athlete, a better person, more capable of handling an ultramarathon or whatever athletic endeavor you're doing, just by kind of knowing more about the different phenomenon that are going on during the race itself. So I was wondering if there's anything in particular that stuck out to you in the research that somebody who's listening to this, just by knowing it, would have a little bit of an advantage out there on the race course, just by knowing that little tidbit of information, or that somebody has experienced something similar based on the surveys that you've been doing, that they can kind of take away from a functional standpoint and go, you know what, I could possibly be a better runner through now having known this.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, thinking about it, obviously from a pain context, there's a number of things that I think could be really helpful. The first one is actually really about talking about your pain with your peers and your coach, if you are being coached. You know, is there a dominant narrative around that? How comfortable do you feel talking about it or seeking help if you need it? And, you know, really kind of taking the time to kind of reflect on that as well, in terms of how do I feel about pain and what is the narrative within the environment that I find myself in, whether it's in a club, whether it's in another type of space, and really trying to kind of, you know, drill down into that. And then there's another point really, which is very much around when you start to experience pain in any way, shape or form, and feels like a niggle, or it feels like something that, you know, potentially could manifest into something else, I always think from a prevention perspective, it's better to get on top of it as early as possible. So if it's something that's bothering you a little bit, rather than trying to push through the pain and just carry on with your training as normal, or, you know, your race as normal, take a bit of time out, go and get it checked out with a specialist, you know, a physiotherapist, or, you know, whoever, just to make sure that everything is okay. Or if there's something to worry about, then at least you can try and, you know, get onto it firsthand. So those would be two starting points. I'll take a pause there in case you want to ask any questions around that.
I mean, actually, that's perfect. Those are two, I think, particularly with the first one being, I kind of started this with, not everything has to be an intervention. You can actually view that as an intervention. Every week or twice a week, I'm going to talk about, you know, how I experienced pain during this workout with my training partner, my coach, somebody that can actually be a sounding board. Because I keep coming back to this, the more and more I explore it, is that it's just as much of a learned skill as any other skill that we see in sport, whether that's learning how to kick a soccer ball or shoot a free throw or any prototypical skill that we think about. Learning how to manage your relationship with pain and how to push yourself and how to understand the signals that your body is relaying to your brain is just as much, or can be just as much of a honed skill as anything else, if you give the space to actually hone it. So you wouldn't be able to shoot a free throw if you've never picked up a basketball and stood at the free throw line and shot that free throw hundreds and hundreds of times. Similarly, you don't expect to have a accurate representation or accurate interpretation of the pain that's coursing through your body unless you take the time to intellectualize it, process it, and discuss it with others. That's the way that I've always kind of viewed this learned skill aspect.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
Let me ask you to kind of like sum up with, where do you want to take the future of this? You know, you've had some initial research on it, and you're obviously not the first and the only person to explore this. I think there's actually a robust community of researchers that are trying to describe this phenomenon within particularly athletic populations, but other populations as well. Where do you want to see it go after this initial dive into it?
Yeah, so I mentioned right at the beginning that I'm in the second year of my doctorate program at St. Mary's University. And what I'm doing currently is actually exploring, looking into chronic pain within endurance sports. So that would, of course, include ultra running, but it also includes other types of endurance sports as well, triathlon, cycling, et cetera, et cetera. And my kind of interest there is, I think it's fair to say that if you look at most of the sort of developed nations, so if you think of the US, you think of the UK, Australia, for example, I think it's something like 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 people in those countries who live with chronic pain, right? So it's obviously a huge priority in terms of public health. But then when you narrow that down into the endurance sports sort of landscape, the evidence is less clear. However, we know anecdotally, even just from hearing from, elite athletes, that they are and have lived with chronic pain. And therefore, I think, it definitely an area that warrants, more research to kind of understand more about perceptions, experiences of chronic pain, how that might differ across different endurance sports as well. So that's just a flavor of where my research is heading sort of at the moment.
It's an interesting intersection because I touched on this theme earlier. Athletes kind of accept the fact that living with some level of pain or discomfort is part of the gig. It's part of, it's going to be part of whatever, whatever they live with, because the training's supposed to be hard. And, in order to improve, you got to get worse before you get better. And part of that getting worse part is you tear your muscles apart and they have to rebuild and tear other structures apart in a healthy way, obviously. But if there is a line of demarcation, and it's probably not, it's probably a very gray area. If there's some sort of line of demarcation or gray area between the pain that can ultimately be productive and the pain that is counterproductive, it's hard to discern because you have an audience that's willing to, partially, because you have an audience that's willing to accept it. Then you combine that with the fact that, let's just face it, endurance athletes are always injured. And part of that injury process is recognizing the pain signals that could potentially be a warning sign for a potential injury. So I have no doubt at all that you're going to have a robust cohort of people to draw from because of all of these. If anybody wants to sign up for any of this research, Lloyd, how can they find out more about it or actually get a hold of you to learn more?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can contact me via email and I'll share my link with you afterwards, which you can include in your show notes. You can also follow me on Twitter as well. It's Nathan78, and I'll share the handle with you as well, Jason, afterwards. So I'd say these are probably the two best ways of finding me. I'm on LinkedIn as well, but I would say probably X and email are the best ways of getting in contact with me.
Awesome. Good job at using the updated app name X as opposed to Twitter. It's about 50-50 now. Maybe a couple of years from now, we'll get to 75-25. Everybody will come into the modern era. Anyway, I really appreciate your work. Like I said, this has been something that I've explored several times on this podcast. It's something that's personally very fascinating to me. It's relevant to me both as a coach and an athlete. And the audience, anytime I put up something about our relationship with pain or the brain or anything like that, it ends up being quite a popular episode, I think, for a very good reason. So I'm very appreciative of your research. Links to everything will be in the show notes. And I hope some people get a hold of you after this podcast. And once again, I appreciate your time.
Cool. Thank you very much, Jason. Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, folks, there you have it. There you go. Much thanks to Lloyd for coming on the podcast today and giving us some framework and some context to work with this colloquial and metaphorical pain cave that we all encounter and really have to work with and work through as we are training and competing for these ultra marathon events. As we were discussing this topic, I really came away with two big highlights. The first of which is if you want to have better identification with the pain that you're going to inevitably endure, a great piece of framework for that is to just simply talk about it. You can recall this in a journal or in your training log. You can discuss it with your coach or with your training partners. Somehow verbalizing it and putting context to it after you have experienced being in the pain caves gives you a better ability when you have to visit it in the future to recall those memories as something that you could actually deal with. And if it's something that you didn't deal with very well, it also gives you context of how you can course correct that in the future. The second takeaway that I came away with after this podcast was there's a difference between pain associated with just competing and pushing ourselves in ultramarathons and the pain associated with injuries. And we should learn to differentiate between the two. And in many cases, athletes are actually quite adept at creating that separation between those two different points of pain. Links to all the discussion points will be in the show notes. I hope you guys check that out. As always, I appreciate the heck out of each and every one of you listeners out there. If you want to support this podcast, all you have to do is just share it with your friends and your training partners. There is no better way to share the love of the information that is contained within this podcast by just simply passing it along to other athletes. All right, folks, that is it for today. And as always, we will see you out on the trails.